Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Today we're talking about part 3, chapter 27. Were they better off with serfs? Follow-up question, what would it have been like to be a serf? Thermos of Beer said, this chapter seems like it was an opportunity for Tolstoy to complain about the abolishment of serfdom and its effects on farming through his characters. I'm still not sure what all this mowing and farming has to do with Anna Karenina, who is this book is titled for, but I guess I'll just have to wait and see. Maybe Karenin banishes her to the countryside and she decides to spend her whole life making farms profitable again as some sort of penance. I don't really know. Swim said the mum fishy said, well, apparently the land question, also known as the peasant question, was a hot topic while Tolstoy was writing Anna Karenina. So I believe at least he is presenting different sides of the arguments through his characters. A bit boring, really, isn't it? Like, I always think sometimes a book will come out like a novel, fiction novel, but it's really like topical and very much like addressing something that is the hot topic, but or like inadvertently, like it's a book, you know, it might be like a romance, but it's also got a whole thing about, you know, this thing that's the hot topic at the moment. Very much like what Tolstoy is doing here with like a romance, and then the question of the land and the serfs and everything is all the rage at that time. And I always think, like, when I see modern books like that, I'm like, well, what's going to be left of this book when no one really, like, when that issue's sorted? Is it still going to be interesting? I don't think it's interesting, even when it is a hot topic. So, I mean, I suppose it's interesting through a history lens to see, like, what was happening politically back then. But, I don't know. Yeah. I don't like it. It feels a bit shoehorned in, doesn't it? Like a conversation that he wants to have, a point that he wants to make. And when you're writing a novel, you can sort of make that point very one-sided, right? Swim said the Mama Fishy said, well, the boobies chapter was a lot more fun to read. The time period is a tad earlier, but below is a good idea of the neckline that was giving Levin so much trouble. And here's a picture, I'm guessing, of cleavage. Oh, yes. Well, many pictures of it. Right. It's not even cleavage, is it? It's like sternum. Exposed sternum. Or like the little bit of chest in between. Well, not even, no, that is cleavage. What am I saying? In between, like, the top of your boobs, not the middle of your boobs. Anyway. Cool. All right. I'm looking at boobs. I had a hard time following this current chapter, so here is an internet summary. Oh, cool. I love a good internet summary. At dinner, Svetsky entertains two old-fashioned landowners who missed the bygone days of serfdom in Russia. One of the landowners claims that farming was better in those days and that the emancipation of the serfs has ruined Russia. Levin meditates on the fact that in virtually all aspects of Savitsky's life, there are huge contradictions between what Savitsky inward believes and what he outwardly lives. Savitsky argues that all farming should be done under a rational scientific system, whereas one of the landowner guests asserts that farming simply requires a firm authority looming over the peasantry. Levin agrees that his is a thing of the past. Sorry, Levin agrees that his attempts to introduce farming innovations to peasants have been disastrous. Svetsky maintains that serfdom is a thing of the past and that hired labour is the future that all Russian landowners must accept. He asserts that education is the key to winning over the peasants, but Levin disagrees. This might be what Levin believes. Levin's farming scheme is an action founded on material interests, to quote Kosnichnev, aimed to the efficient use of available resources of land and labour so that the peasants as well as the master gain profit. Unnecessary waste is repulsive to Levin, exemplified at the disgust over Stever's careless sale of the valuable forest. who believes that long-term reforms, excuse me, got the hiccups, and basic life goals are based on materialist considerations. Levin's passion for ergonomic reform satisfies his need for arduous work and expresses his search for meaning through emotional commitment rather than through intellectual inquiry. I found a couple of interesting articles on serfdom in Russia. I'm not going to read those. I Am Norwegian said, while the conversation between the three landowners itself wasn't very interesting, I did appreciate the context it brought to the friction and difficulty that happened after the emancipation. It also seemed clear that Tolstoy had a lot of sympathy for the landowner who thought emancipation had ruined Russia's ability to farm profitably and to work the land efficiently. I really doubt that Tolstoy agreed with the opinion itself, given how much he cared for the peasants, but it was clear that he understood how the opinions of men like that were formed. Instead of simply decrying the man as a regressive, the narrator talks with empathy. It's the kind of approach that I wish we saw more of. Could it be that he likes serfs, right? But, which is, like, true. Tolstoy liked the serfs, and he liked to get to know them and get his hands dirty and do a bit of hard manual labor to feel what they live like. And he believed that they were, like, good people, like the best people or whatever. I don't know. Maybe I'm putting words in his mouth now. But anyway, he liked the serfs. But maybe he liked them as serfs. You know what I mean? Like, he liked the lifestyle that they had whilst in serfdom. Could that be it? And it's funny that after the serfs were emancipated, well, actually, it's like 100 years later, so it's not like a direct result, but the really good farmers all got shipped off to Siberia, and they had a whole, what was it, a whole famine and everything. So they hadn't sorted it out just yet. They had some pretty big hurdles to come across yet with their agriculture. Nifty Rikvik says, by the way, my Russian history is really, really shonky, so I don't know if I got that right or not, but Nifty Rifik says, I was a bit curious about potatoes being introduced by force in Russia and read a short little history about it here at Potato History. Tell me that's a website, potatohistory.com. No, historymagazine.com/potato. Potatoes apparently have historically fallen victim to prejudice and were thought to be nothing better than fodder, such as oats. I enjoyed this tidbit. Frederick the Great of Prussia saw that potatoes' potential to help feed his nation and lower the price of bread, but faced the challenge of overcoming the people's prejudice against the plant when he issued a 1774 order for his subjects to grow potatoes as protection against famine. The town of Kolberg replied, "The things have neither smell nor taste, not even the dogs will eat them, so what use are they to us?" Trying a less direct approach to encourage his subjects to begin planting potatoes, Frederick used a bit of reverse psychology. He planted a royal field of potato plants and stationed a heavy guard to protect his field from thieves. Nearby peasants naturally assumed that anything worth guarding was worth stealing, and so snuck into the field and snatched the plants for their home gardens. Of course, this was entirely in line with Frederick's wishes. Sneaky old Frederick, eh? How did they not know that potatoes were delicious? Like, potatoes are the best thing ever. I suppose they didn't fry them and cover them in salt yet. They hadn't figured that bit out. Regarding Catherine the Great, in the Russian Empire, Catherine the Great ordered her subjects to begin cultivating the tuber, but many ignored this order. They were supported in the dissension by the Orthodox Church, which argued that potatoes were suspect because they were not mentioned in the Bible. Potatoes were not widely cultivated in Russia until 1850, when Tsar Nicholas I began to enforce Catherine's order. Potatoes are indigenous of South America and were not obviously being internationally cultivated in biblical times. They were suspect of potatoes. Like, not in the Bible. Are they from hell? Are they from the devil's face? What? Funny. Also, isn't vodka made from potatoes? Russians love potatoes. Alright. Anyway, who cares about potatoes? Let's read chapter 28. Levin felt intolerably bored by the ladies that evening. He He was more than excited by the thought that the dissatisfaction with work on the land, which he now experienced, was not an exceptional state of mind, but the result of the condition of agriculture in Russia generally, and that some arrangement that would make the labourers work as they did for the peasant at the halfway house was not an idle dream, but a problem it was necessary to solve, and he felt that it could be solved, and that he must try to do it. Having said goodnight to the ladies and promised to stay a whole day longer in order to ride with them and see an interesting landslide in the state forest, Levin, before going to bed, went to the host's study to borrow the books on the labour question which Savatsky had offered him. Savatsky's study was an enormous room lined with book cupboards. There were two tables in it, one a massive writing table, and the other a round one which lay a number of newspapers and journals in different languages arranged as if they were mats around the lamp in the centre. Besides the writing table was a stand with gold-labelled drawers containing various business papers. Savatsky got down the books and settled himself in a rocking chair. "What is it you are looking at?" he asked Levin, who, having stopped at the round table, was looking at one of the journals. "Oh, there is a very interesting article here," he added, referring to the journal Levin held in his hand. "It turns out that the chief agent in the partition of Poland was not Frederick at all," he added with gleeful animation. "It turns out," and with characteristic clearness he briefly recounted the news and very important and interesting discoveries. Though at present Levin was more interested in agriculture than in anything else, he asked himself while listening to his host, "What is there inside him? And why does the partition of Poland interest him?" And when Savatsky had finished, he could not help asking him, "Well, and what of it?" But Savatsky had no answer to give. It was interesting that it turns out, and he did not consider it necessary to explain why it interested him. "Yes. And I was greatly interested by that cross old landowner," said Levin with a sigh. "He is intelligent and said much that is true." "Oh, pooh! He is secretly a rooted partisan of serfdom, like all of them," said Savatsky. "Whose marshal you are?" "Yes, but I marshal them in the opposite direction," said Savatsky, laughing. "What interests me very much is this," said Levin. "He is right when he says that our rational farming is not a success, and that only money-lending methods, like the quiet fellows, or very elementary methods, pay. Whose fault is it?" "Our own, of course, but it is not true that it does not pay. Vasilchikov makes it pay." "A factory?" "I still cannot understand what you are surprised at. The people are on so low a level, both of material and moral development, that they are certain to oppose what is good for them. In Europe, rational farming answers, because the people are educated, therefore we must educate our people, that's all." "But how is one to educate them?" "To educate the people, three things are necessary: schools. But you yourself just said that the people are on a low level of material development. How will schools help that?" "Do you know, you remind me of the story of the advice given to a sick man. You should try an aperient. I have, and it made me worse. Try leeches. I have, and they made me worse. Well, then you had better pray to God. I have, and that made me worse." "It is just the same with us. I mention political economy, you say it makes things worse. I mention socialism, you say still worse. Education, worse and worse. But how will schools help?" "By giving people other wants." "Now that I never could understand, replied Levin hotly. "How will schools help the peasants to improve their material conditions? You say that schools and education will give them new wants. So much the worse, for they won't be able to satisfy them." "And in what way, knowing how to add and subtract, and to say the catechism, will help them to improve their material condition, I never could understand. The other evening I met a woman with an infant in her arms and asked her where she was going. She replied that she had been to see the wise woman because her boy was fractious, and she took him to be cured. I asked her what cure the wise woman had for the fractiousness, and she puts the baby on the perch among the fowls and says something. Well, there is your answer. Education will stop them from carrying their children to the roosts to cure them from fractiousness," said Savatsky with a merry smile. "Not at all," said Levin crossly. "That treatment seems to me just a parallel of treating the peasants by means of schools. The people are poor and ignorant. This we know as surely as the woman knows that the child is fractious because it cries. But why schools should cure the ills of poverty and ignorance is just as incomprehensible as why hens on their perches should cure fractiousness. What needs to be cured is their poverty. Well, in this at least you agree with Spencer, whom you dislike so much. He too says that education may result from increased well-being and comfort from frequent ablutions, as he expresses it, but not from the ability to read and reckon. Well, I'm very glad, or rather very sorry, that I coincide with Spencer, but it is a thing that I have long known. Schools are no remedy, but the remedy would be an economic organization under which people would be better off and have more leisure. Then schools would come. Yet all over Europe, education is now compulsory. And how do you agree with Spencer yourself in this matter? A frightened look flashed up Savatsky's eyes, and he said with a smile, "Yes, that cure for fractiousness is splendid. Did you really hear it yourself?" Levin saw that he would not succeed in finding a connection between this man's life and his thoughts. It was evidently all the same to him what conclusions his reasoning led to. He only needed the process itself, and he did not like it when the process of reasoning led him up a blind alley that he disliked and evaded by turning the conversation to something pleasantly jocular. All the impressions of that day, beginning with the impression of the peasant at the halfway house, which seemed to serve as a foundation for all the other impressions and ideas, agitated Levin greatly. There was this amiable Savatsky, who kept his opinions only for social use and evidently had some other basis of life which Levin could not discern, while with that crowd, whose name is Legion, he directed a public opinion by means of thoughts foreign to himself, and that embittered landowner, with perfectly sound views he had wrung painfully from life, but wrong in his bitterness toward a whole class, and that the best class in Russia, and Levin's own discontent with his own activity, and his vague hope of finding a remedy for all these things, all this merged into a feeling of restlessness and expectation of a speedy solution. Left alone in the room assigned to him, and lying on a spring mattress which bounced unexpectedly whenever he moved a leg or an arm, it was long before Levin could sleep. Not one of the talks he had had with Savatsky, though much that was clever had been said by the latter, interested him, but the landowner's arguments required consideration. Levin involuntarily remembered all that the man had said, and corrected in imagination the answers he himself had given. "I ought to have said to him, 'You say that our farming is not a success because the peasants hate all improvements and that these should be introduced by force, and if farming did not pay at all without these improvements, you would be right. But it succeeds where, and only where, as in the case of the man at the halfway house, the labourers act in conformity with their habits. Your and our common dissatisfaction with farming shows that we, and not the peasants, are at fault. We have long pushed on in our own way, the European way, without considering the nature of the labour force available. Let us consider the labourer not as an abstract labour force, but as a Russian peasant with his own instincts, and let us arrange our farming accordingly. Imagine, I ought to have said to him, that your farming is conducted like that old man's, that you have found means to interest the labourers in the result of their work, and have found improvements which they must recognise as such, them without impoverishing the soil. Then, without impoverishing the soil, you will get double and treble the crops you get now. Divide equally, and give half the produce to labour, and the share left for you will be larger, and the labour force will receive more. And to do this, we must lower the level of cultivation and give the peasants an interest in its success. How this can be done is a question of details, but it is certainly possible. This thought strongly excited Levin. He lay awake half the night considering the details necessary for carrying out his thought into effect. He had not meant to leave next day, but now decided to go away early in the morning. Moreover, there was the sister-in-law with the square-cut bodice, who occasioned in him a feeling akin to shame and repentance caused by the commission of a bad action. Above all, he had to get away immediately to propose his new plan to the peasants before the winter corn was sown, so that the work might be done on the new conditions. He decided completely to reverse his former methods of farming. Whoa. Bombshell. farming method reversal. Ho! Bet you didn't expect a farming method reversal in your day today. Damn, that is some heavy stuff. Oh, I don't know how I'm going to sleep tonight with a whole farming method reversal in my head. Have your say about this chapter over at the subreddit. Thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.